Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to First Unitarian Church. Come on in. Pull up a chair. Bring your coffee, if you like. Bring your hopes and dreams. Bring your whole mind and your doubts. Bring yourself and bring that cat that wants to walk across your keyboard every time you sit down at the computer. It's time for church, a church that embraces all that is our lives. Welcome to this sacred hour. I'm Angela Herrera, the senior minister. I'm joined this morning by our associate minister, Bob LaValle, by our music director, Susan Peck. Can we get a spot on Susan? There she is. And by our volunteer DJ, Chris Paul. We always count on our volunteer tech team to run things behind the scenes. I'm happy to introduce our lay worship leader, Judy Goring, this morning. Judy was a regular in our services in the sanctuary, but this is her very first time helping to lead church on Zoom. So welcome, Judy, and she is going to help us get rolling with an announcement.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome everybody from within the United States, and we have visitors from outside of the United States. I have an announcement for you this morning. Do you have a religious or spiritual question for our ministers? How about ethics questions or questions about social issues? Well, here's your chance. Next Sunday, August 30th, Angela and Bob will deliver a question box sermon. That means instead of preaching a sermon, they'll draw your questions out of a hat and take turns responding. Now, and this is pretty surprising for a church full of skeptics and seekers. So far, we only have received one question. One. We can do better than that. Let's see if we can send them more questions than they can answer in one day. They'll turn some of the extra ones into future sermons. You can turn your questions in today by putting it in the chat box. Just type, "Dear Ministers," in front of it so no one tries to answer it for you in the chat. Or you can email your questions anytime this week to specials@uuabq.org. That's specials, specials, at uuabq.org. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lara Magnuson, and I am speaking to you from a semi-quiet corner of my house. You know, I had planned to film this in the church courtyard, but like for many families right now, things are just a little too crazy for us. So I'm grabbing a moment when I can. No matter how crazy things get, though, I have a really important message that I wanted to share with you all this morning. Normally, or on a non-2020 year, today would have been Connection Sunday. Now, this is an event where we can meet and chat with the organizers of all the different groups in the church. You know, the groups that really make the church what it is. But this year, instead, we are having Connections Week. We're spreading those meetings out over 8 days from next Sunday, August 30th, every day through Sunday, September 6th. each of those 30 groups will have a 30-minute time slot on Zoom where you can meet the organizers, ask questions, and sign up to get involved with them. To see the whole schedule, you can go to the First U website and click on the Connections Week banner there at the top of the page. That will take you to a page that has the whole schedule and links where you can sign up for each session right then and there. I'm going to have the tech team put that link in our chat right now for you. Another exciting reminder is that Connections Week is when you can sign up for a covenant group. Now, if you have been waiting to sign up for a covenant group, make sure you look for them on the page and register for one of the three sessions in order to participate. Finally, I know Zoom can be a challenge. So if you have any questions or are having trouble figuring out how you can participate, I hope you'll email me so I can help you out. Either I will help you or I'll find someone else who can. Our tech team's going to put my email down there in the chat box for you also. I can't wait to see and connect with all of you during Connections Week. Thank you.
As we light our chalices today, we draw on the words of Reverend Gretchen Haley. We gather to surrender to the mystery, to release ourselves from the needing to know. Here in our song and in our silence, our stories and our sharing, we make space for a new breath, a new healing, a new possibility to take root. We believe still a new world is possible, that we are creating it here and now.
Good morning. Will you please join me in singing our opening song? This is a song we sang quite a bit in the sanctuary. It's one of my favorites from the Turquoise Hymnal. There's a river flowing in my soul. The words are in the chat box, and we'll sing all three verses. And this song comes to me, especially in this time of the census and the election. It's so important for everybody to be counted, for everyone's voice to be heard. This song was originally written by a leader of the civil rights movement, Faya Rose Touré. So let's continue that work and make sure that our census in New Mexico reaches to everybody. So here's our song. River flowing in my soul.
I'm Luciana, and I invite you to do the UU affirmation with me. Here we go. We are Unitarian Universalists. We are people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, and helping.
Let's pause the chat for a few moments as we move into a time of meditation and prayer. Make yourself comfortable, whatever that requires for your body today. Take a deep breath. If you're comfortable, close your eyes. And in your mind, picture a giant tree, bigger than any tree that you've ever seen. Hear the wind in its branches. Smell the earth where the roots dig in. Reach out and feel the bark. Now consider the roots of the tree reaching down, down into the earth. Consider your own roots. Who are the people who brought you here? Maybe they're people you know of. Maybe they're people you never met. And maybe they're people that you never even heard of. Who brought us here? Who are the people who helped create a more just and caring world? Who bent the arc of history towards justice? Think of the way that the world is a better place because of their efforts. Think of those folks and offer them gratitude. Now turn your attention to the branches reaching up so high into the sky. Picture them swaying in the breeze. And think of the good things the future might bring. What great acts of love do we dare to imagine? Imagine them now. What new beauty and justice can we dream of? Dream of that now. How will the arc of history bend towards justice? Take a step back from the tree now. And return to the room you're really in now. Maybe open your eyes. And holding these dreams and imaginings, we'll sit for 2 minutes of silence.
in the sharing of joys and concerns. Our happiness is multiplied and our burdens are lessened. When the video begins, share your joys and concerns in the chat bar that we may hold together. If you're not able to write them in the chat bar, we'd love to know what's on your heart. Send them to caring@uuabq.org and let us know what you're doing. Let's share our joys and concerns now.
We see our joys and we see our concerns. So many joys, the joy of being outside and joy for the health of our loved ones and this connection with families and friends and joy for optimism about the future of this country. And concerns about the wildfires in California and the ongoing effects of climate change and concern about the stress of this time of COVID and how hard it is on all of us. We remember Chuck Blocker's father who recently passed. May light perpetual shine upon him. And we think of Sue Redfern's cousin, Chuck Redfern, and we hope for comfort and peace for him and his family. All these joys and concerns, and all those joys and concerns held in our hearts unspoken, but no less deeply felt, we lift them all up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal that are known by many names. The Dalai Lama says that no matter what we believe, we all worship in the temple of our own hearts, and we seek the holy now in the temple of our own hearts. We lift up those who have lost animal companions. May they find consolation in their memories. We remember Sally Jacobson, who is in hospice. May she know comfort and peace. We lift those who are lonely, those who lack for food or housing. May they find security and comfort. And may they know their value has nothing to do with dollars and cents. We lift up all those who struggle with their health, be it physical or mental or emotional or spiritual. May they find healing. We celebrate those who fight for justice, and we draw hope from their example. And we lift up all those who face resistance for choosing to live their identity with integrity. And we give thanks for this Unitarian Universalist congregation. May we always be healthy in process and fruitful in outcomes. And we celebrate the things that bring us hope, the eternal possibilities of learning, of love, of growth. Let us see the beauty and holiness in the streets that we travel on. Let us see the beauty and holiness in each other. Let us see the beauty and holiness in ourselves. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
No one knows me, no one else. If I don't say something, take that striped blue pill, they may see that monster, they may run away. But I have to do this. I can't keep quiet no more. I can't keep quiet no more. I'm a one-woman riot, oh, oh. Oh, I can't keep quiet.
There'll be someone who'll understand.
Let it out, let it out, let it out now.
Must be someone who'll understand.
Let it out, let it out, let it out now.
There'll be someone who'll understand.
Let it out, let it out, let it out now. I can't keep quiet, no, no. I can't keep quiet, no, no. I can't keep quiet, no, no. I won't keep quiet.
Our reading this morning, I Have No Quarrel With You, was written in 1917 by the suffragette Florence Brooks Whitehouse. I have no quarrel with you, but I stand for the clear right to hold my life my own. The clean, clear right to mold it as I will, not as you will, with or apart from you, to make it a thing of brain and blood, of tangible substance and of turbulent thought, no gray shadow of the life of man. Your love, perchance, may set a crown upon it, but I may crown myself in other ways, as you have done, who are one flesh with me. I have no quarrel with you, but henceforth, this you must know. The world is mine, as yours, the pulsing strength and passion and heart of it. The work I set my hand to woman's work, because I set my hand to it. Thank you.
That was I Have No Quarrel With You, written in 1917 by the suffragist Florence Brooks Whitehouse. This week marked the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the amendment that says, quote, "The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." The amendment was passed by Congress on June 4th, 1919, and ratified on August 18th, 1920. So it took more than a year after it was passed by Congress for it to make its way through enough states to turn into an amendment. But that year was nothing compared to the decades of work that led up to that point. This is such an interesting time right now for this 100th anniversary, because the subject of voting is again a contentious one in our country. And I don't just mean who to vote for, but who gets to vote. All citizens? Only those who have no felony record? How about people who have done their time for a crime? The answer differs from state to state. And it's not just contentious around who to vote for and who gets to vote, but also how voting can take place. By mail, in person. There's contention over what kind of safeguards are needed. Do voter ID laws help? Well, studies show that they do more harm than good. How should we protect our election system against the threat of cyber attack or foreign interference, though? the system is so fragmented that there don't seem to be any easy answers. And finally, there's also debate over to what extent the right to vote should be protected from unnecessary obstacles, like requiring people to have a certain kind of ID, or holding elections on a weekday when many people are working, or not having enough voting locations so that people have to travel and wait in lines. And right now, only 40% of polling places are fully accessible to people with disabilities. So when it comes to obstacles, a lot of the time, that's the same as the question of who gets to vote. These questions are of concern to Unitarian Universalists. Among the principles that ground and guide our denomination, the fifth one says, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. We believe people should have a say in the matters that concern them. Nothing about us without us, right? Everyone should have a voice. The way that we remember stories about what we call the right to vote obscures the fact that actually it's still not an absolute right. The main body of the Constitution only mentions voting as an activity of the legislature, actually. It does not say anything about US citizens and the right to vote. That was not part of the original body of the document at all. Carnegie Mellon University historian Lisa Tetro reminds us that the founders were creating a republic, not a democracy. The first 10 amendments, known as the Bill of Rights, also don't mention voting. It's only when you get to the rest of the amendments that the rights of ordinary people to vote are mentioned at all. And even then, the Constitution does not actually guarantee anyone the right. It only removes certain obstacles. The right to vote shall not be denied based on race. The right to vote should not be denied based on sex. But otherwise, it leaves the right to vote ultimately up to the discretion of the states. So there's no constitutional guarantee. And that is why, even though many of us have been taught that the right to vote is central to American democracy, that right has not been all the way won yet. We're still working on it. And future generations are going to tell the story of this time. Let's travel back in time to understand our location in history right now. If you want to tell a story about the 19th Amendment, you really have to begin much earlier than 1919 or 1920. In fact, to get a fuller picture of the amendment's meaning and impact, you really have to start about a century earlier with the struggle for abolition. Many women who went on to become active in the woman suffrage movement first found their public voices in the cause of abolition. The link and the conflict that arose between those two movements had a kind of domino effect that clinked forward, and we can still feel it today. When we think of the 19th Amendment, the first person who comes to mind, of course, is Susan B. Anthony. And though she died at the age of 86, 14 years before the amendment was passed, she was such a central figure in the suffrage movement, the amendment was named after her. Susan B. Anthony's family had been active in the abolition movement. Anthony knew Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman, and she aided in the Underground Railroad. In the same years, Anthony also joined the leadership of the National Woman's Rights Society. And leading up to the Civil War, she ran campaigns both for women's rights and against slavery. After the Civil War, Anthony helped organize the National Woman Suffrage Association. Initially, the group's goal was that Black and white women would win the right to vote alongside Black men through a 15th Amendment to the Constitution. But when the focus of the amendment shifted to race and not gender, Anthony and her friend Elizabeth Cady Stanton took offense. They did not want to see voting rights extended to Black men before it was extended to women, and specifically, they did not want to see Black men vote before white women. And from there, it got ugly fast. Most of us did not learn this part of the story in school when we were kids. But, of course, when we talk about history during a Sunday service at First Unitarian Church, it is usually not just to simply reaffirm our country's national myths. It is to challenge them and complicate them and get a better understanding of today. Using a racial slur to refer to Black people, Elizabeth Cady Stanton declared that, quote, "Those who do not know the difference between a monarchy and a republic, who cannot read the Declaration of Independence or Webster's spelling book, should not get the right to vote first." And she said that the 15th Amendment, quote, "creates antagonism everywhere between educated, refined women and the lower orders of men." Susan B. Anthony agreed. I imagine Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass were appalled. Douglass was a lifelong supporter of women's rights. His support had played an important role in getting women's rights on the list of demands in the famous Seneca Falls Convention of 1948. He and Harriet Tubman must have been upset, but I wonder if they were totally surprised. The idea that Black men should have the right to vote before white women was a challenge to Anthony's and Stanton's and many other white women's understanding of themselves in the social hierarchy. Although women as a sex and Black people as a race had both been treated as less than by white men, white women had been able to wield their close relationships with white men to their own advantage. If a white woman wished to show her dominance over a Black person, even a man, all she had to do was complain to the white man in charge. This dynamic was so common that among Black people, there was a shorthand name for it, Miss Anne. A Miss Anne was an imperious, out of touch white woman who threw her weight around at Black people. Today, when a white woman calls upon the authorities to bring down harsh discipline on a person of color, she is referred to as a Karen. And many white women take offense at this. And yet, it's important to know that it does not come out of nowhere. It's a way of calling attention to the patterned behavior of an old racist hierarchy. Not everyone in the women's rights movement was so attached to the racial hierarchy that they would stand in the way of a 15th Amendment, though. Lucy Stone, also a white woman, was another well-known activist. She'd been at it from a very young age. At age 15, when her father paid for her brother's college educations but refused to pay for hers, Stone got a job and she saved up for 10 years until in 1843, she was able to put herself through Oberlin College, the only US college that accepted women at that time. She taught reading to people who had fled or been freed from slavery. When she married, she kept her last name, a radical thing to do at that time. And at their wedding, she and her husband read aloud a marriage protest about the lack of women's legal and property rights in marriage. When Stanton and Anthony opposed the 15th Amendment, Lucy Stone split off from the National Woman Suffrage Association, and she helped Frederick Douglass and Frances Ellen Watkins Harper organize a new group, the American Women Suffrage Association. That group supported the 15th Amendment and they planned a state-by-state strategy for winning the vote for women. The opportunity was there for white women not to buy into or to further white supremacist arguments about the right to vote. They could work in solidarity with the many women of color who had been working and continued to work for the same cause. I mentioned the name Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. She is one of those heroes from American history whose name we should know. She was born in 1825 in Baltimore to free African-American parents. Although her mother died when she was just three, thanks to an enlightened uncle, Harper received formal education from a young age. She grew up to be a public leader and a sought-after lecturer who traveled all around the country working for abolition. She was the first woman teacher at Union Seminary. She was a prolific author who supported herself through publishing her writings. She wrote poetry, essays, speeches. She was the first African-American woman to publish a short story. And she went on to write a novel that is considered a classic of African-American literature, which is also to say a classic of American literature. The year after the Civil War ended in 1866, Harper delivered a famous speech at the National Women's Rights Convention called "We Are All Bound Up Together," urging white suffragists to include African Americans in their fight for suffrage. You know what? Susan B. Anthony, Lucy Stone, and Frances Ellen Watkins Harper all were Unitarians. All three were active members of Unitarian churches. A while back, the New York Times ran an article that named some of the many Black women and other women of color who led the fight for voting rights, not only Harper, but also the community organizer Juno Frankie Pierce and the journalists Josephine St. Pierre Ruffin, Elizabeth Piper Ensley, and Ida B. Wells Barnett. We need to say their names. Native American women such as Suzette LaFleche Tibbles and Zitkala Shah. Queer women like the poet Angelina Weld Grimke and the educator Mary Burrell. Latina women like Jovita Aguilar and Asian American women like Mabel Ping Hua Lee, who led thousands of marchers in a 1912 suffrage parade in New York. They all fought for the vote as part of a broader struggle for equality, but their stories are not well known. They're told usually as footnotes in histories that center white people. And in fact, despite all of this diverse participation in the movement, when it came time for the first suffrage parade in Washington, D.C. in 1913, the white women leaders instructed Black women to physically march at the back so that white delegates from Southern states would not be offended. Not everyone complied with that nonsense. Ida B. Wells famously said, "Either I go with you or not at all." And then she appeared right in the middle of the parade with the white members of her delegation. Nevertheless, if you didn't know better, you would think that after the 15th and the 19th Amendments were both passed, everyone had the right to vote regardless of race or sex, right? Well, no. The Constitution still did not and still does not say that everyone has a right to vote. So what happened? Well, as the backlash to Reconstruction grew and Jim Crow laws took effect well before the 19th Amendment was ever ratified, the states found sneaky ways to suppress Black voters with things like grandfather clauses, poll taxes, and literacy tests. And they found some not so sneaky ways like outright violence. That is why when the 19th Amendment passed, it resulted in white women being able to vote, but not Black women. The amendment had done nothing to address the suppression happening against Black women's votes. That would take another 40 years when, as a result of the Civil Rights Movement, the Voting Rights Act was signed into federal law. Up until then, states could argue that their laws never mentioned race and therefore were not racist. After the Voting Rights Act, a law only had to have a racist impact to be considered racist. Not only that, jurisdictions with a history of racist voter suppression had to get federal approval of their voting laws. The impact was swift and it was undeniable. Voting rates among people of color shot up immediately, sometimes surpassing the rates of white voting. The law was challenged multiple times in the Supreme Court, but it held. In 2006, Congress once again reauthorized the law, and they did so with a level of bipartisan agreement that seems unfathomable today. The vote was 390-33 in the House, and it was unanimous in the Senate. President George W. Bush called the bill, quote, "an example of our continued commitment to a united America where every person is valued and treated with dignity and respect." But in 2013, during the tenure of our country's first Black president, the Voting Rights Act was gutted by the conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Once the federal oversight clause was struck down, Texas immediately announced that their voter ID law was going to go forward and redistricting maps would take effect. Since then, we have seen a wave of voter suppression unlike anything since the first half of the 20th century. Voter suppression takes place through those ID laws, voter registration restrictions, through gerrymandering, through eliminating early voting, through closing voting locations, and through the overly aggressive purging of voter rolls. Between 2014 and 2016, almost 16 million voters were purged from the rolls, with the highest rates of purging happening in states that would have been subject to federal oversight under the Voting Rights Act. In 2018, 70% of Georgia voters who were purged were Black. Let's just hear that again. In 2018, 70% of Georgia voters who were purged from the rolls were Black voters. And across the country, counties with larger minority populations have fewer polling sites and fewer poll workers per voter. The problem, as you can see, is that our Constitution does not guarantee a right to vote. It only removes a few obstacles. And as long as individual jurisdictions are allowed to create new obstacles, there will be voter suppression. It's just like a big slow motion game of whack-a-mole with really big consequences. And this brings us to today. Today we have, for the first time, a woman of color nominated as vice president by a major party. And today we have not only widespread voter suppression, but also an administration explicitly trying to put up additional obstacles and discredit the votes that do come in by sowing doubt about their validity. This is a great time for those of us who believe that everyone should have a voice to really get behind that. We might be staying home, but we don't have to stay quiet. This centennial celebration is a great time to build on the work of those who came before us with a deep commitment to equity and anti-racism. So here's one way you can do that. Our church's denomination, the Unitarian Universalist Association, has launched a national UU the Vote campaign and strategy. It's a nonpartisan campaign to get out the vote, and it strategically targets places with higher voter suppression. You can join in right from home. You can go to uuthevote.org to learn more about that. And then if you're interested in participating as part of a congregational team, you can contact me or Lara Magnuson at the church and we'll put you in touch with Peggy Roberts, who's been doing some outreach around that. By starting now, early, we can help people figure out if they've been purged from the rolls without knowing it so that they can get re-registered. We can help them figure out how to apply for an absentee ballot if they're not going to be able to vote at a physical polling place due to the pandemic or other issues. So that effort is at uuthevote.org. The other thing that is important to do right now is to believe in and safeguard your own vote. No matter what state you're going to be voting in, your vote is really important. There is the Electoral College, and then there's the message that raw numbers of votes send. And both are more important than ever. So I want you to be prepared early. Check your own registration status at the Secretary of State's website. If you do a search for Vote NM, that website comes right up for this state. If you're going to vote by mail, you have to apply for that mail-in ballot. Go ahead and do that now, don't wait. Since you know you're gonna be mailing something, next time you go to the grocery store, get some stamps, be ready. And then don't let potential mail delays in November cost you your vote. Actually, drop your ballot off by hand if you can. But if you are mailing in that ballot, you should think of October 20th as election day. Just get it in early. I encourage you to do all of these things. And while you're at it, help somebody else vote too. Just start with the people you know. My kids are both in their 20s and I plan to start hounding them about their absentee ballot applications as soon as we end this church service. It is my patriotic duty and also just good parenting. Lucy Stone died in 1893, 27 years before the 19th Amendment was ratified, 72 years before the Voting Rights Act. The last words Lucy Stone ever spoke were, "Make the world better. Make the world better." She believed that we could. And now I believe that we can. Maybe so.
For our offering today, I'll share with you some words from the Reverend Sarah Eileen Lawal, "Seeking That Which Unites Us." In this time when rhetoric blusters about, and words are used as weapons, may we remember we are a people of resilience. We have faced uncertainty before. We have weathered storms. We have been consumed by flames. We have risen like the phoenix from the ashes, and we will again. May we remember our shared humanity, our universal kinship, our interdependence, as we unclench our fist and breathe together. This church and all who enter are beacons of hope. We weather the storms. We remember our shared humanity. What helps and unites us is the support that you give this church, its mission and programs. To make your offering, please click on the link posted in the chat or go to the church website. You may also send a check to the church. Our Change for the Future recipient this quarter is Roadrunner Food Bank. We will now gratefully receive today's offering. Thank you.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves such souls as
so lovely. What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Church, First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, and the Roadrunner Food Bank, our longtime partner. We're about to wrap up the service, but as we move into the breakout rooms at the end, one thing to possibly think about is, as we consider the myths of suffrage, what other national myths should be examined as well? What stories are we telling ourselves about this country that should be re-examined and reconsidered? Let's extinguish our chalices. We believe still that a new world is possible, that we are creating it here and now. Our worship is over. Our service begins. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.
Do when the spirit says do. You got to do when the spirit says do. Do 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 do. Do when the spirit says do.
Spirit says groove.
You gotta be grooving, you gotta be grooving.
You got to groove when the spirit says groove.
You have got to groove.
When the spirit says groove,
you've got to groove, oh Lord.
You've got to groove
got
when
to
the
groove.
Spirit
says groove, says groove.
Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove.
Before I walk and now I do the 1-2 step. I heard the spirit and it said the groove, yeah. That's why I do my own shuffle, tapping feet, clapping hands. If you can talk, you can sing. If you can walk, you can dance. Spirit told me bust the track with the vocals, and I come around your city rocking with the locals. Fading out, got my eyes closed. I think the Lord talking to me, gotta get up all in my zone. Candle gazing after doing kundalini. I wrote it in my journal trying to find the true meaning. It ain't gonna happen overnight, I really ain't stressing. I'ma get the blessing, I don't need good directions. I just follow spirit, I think I start to hear it. The elders talk about alignment, I just start to get near it. Walk along the path, with or without a clue. When the spirit says do, I make it do what it do.
You got
come
to
on.
Do when the spirit says do.
Oh yeah.
You got to do.
Y'all know what it's like when the spirit says do. I mean, you just gotta do what it do.
The spirit says
I know right
do.
Now, but some spirit told bit right. Spirit says do. Spirit says do. Spirit says do. And you know what? I'ma do what I do. You go ahead and do what you do. And that's how we gonna do what we do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.